Hello there. You're listening to Audacity, the Authentic Entrepreneur podcast. I'm your host, Claire Ackers. In this space, you will hear me talk about anything and everything you need to be an authentic entrepreneur so that you can not only grow a wildly successful business that gives you the wealth and freedom you dream of, but so that you can also stay true to yourself and your values, and also have massive impact with your work. I'm a mum of three, serial entrepreneur, business coach, and cheerleader for those of you who have been brave and audacious enough to set up in business. So, welcome to the Audacity Podcast. I am so glad you're here, and let's dive in to the episode. Okay then, so today I am joined by Matthew Whelan, who is co-founder and director at SW&P Accountancy. Matthew, how are you?
Hi Claire, very well, thank you. Very well, how are you?
I am all right, thank you very much. I'm quite impressed for our YouTube viewers that I've managed to match my shirt to your brand colours. That was...
Yeah, I think I've tried the same as well. I must well sit deliberately in front of our sign. But yeah,
small
I think
things. We've managed quite well. Small yeah, things. So I should probably say, in the interest of full disclosure, that you are my accountant. Do you know it's our 5 year anniversary in July next month? So that's
really
exciting. Yeah,
that's gone very quickly. I remember the very start as well. It's been a good journey so far.
Tell us the story of SW&P. How you came to be?
Oh, okay, succinctly in a nutshell, myself and my business partner both used to work together, train together, qualify together at a firm in Harrogate. From there, both living in Leeds, we got on well as friends, and we thought it might be a wise idea to be able to set up our own firm, because we believed that we could have done it better in a slightly better approach, in a slightly less formal, old-fashioned kind of grey hair, grey suit, man in, you know, a grey tie with a grey pen, as every accountant is probably, you know, depicted. And be a bit more innovative with our approach. We felt like we're a bit more, you know, like-minded in terms of some of our clientele. We have a lot of clients in the sort of 20 to 50 demographic, people who are, you know, on an upward curve in their business. And we felt that we're relatively well placed to be able to help them, you know, take their business from the early stages, you know, up to maturity and then beyond. So, Southern Business Park set up the business in 2014 in a small office in Horsforth. We expanded into a bigger office 2 years later, and then a bigger office a year after that. In 2018, and now we act for in the region of 1,000 clients all across the UK, primarily around the Leeds and West Yorkshire area, but some overseas, and some, you know, mixture of charities and, you know, community interest companies, small sole trader companies, limited companies, offering a full range of services. The key value that we try and add is primarily kind of advisory work, as well as the compliance. What we look to do is, even if we're doing kind of a basic, you know, compliance task with VAT and, you know, company accounts at the year end, we want to, you know, at least with an element of regularity, come out, see you, understand how your business is doing, ask you the right questions, understand what your goals are, what you're looking to achieve. You know, it's quite easy for people to kind of say, oh, you know, I want to have, you know, a villa in Mallorca and I want to have £1 million in the bank, but it's about understanding the steps that you need to get yourself there. And quite often the best way we believe to do that is to potentially say, well, okay, well, when do you want this to happen? So let's say, for example, in 5 years time, you'd want that to be the case. Well, let's look at, you know, what year four would look like in order for you to get there. Well, year four would mean in order for you to get to that point, you'd need 1,000 clients, each giving you £5,000 fee income. Okay, well, what would year three mean in order for you to get those clients? Well, you need to then look at a marketing strategy to get people on board or incentivize your existing clients to be able to refer the right sort of work in order to then bring that clientele in. In year two, what would you need to have? You need to build the right sort of staff base in order to make sure that you've got the right sort of expertise to be able to do the work. And it's step by step. You then bring it back to the day that you're at today and you go, I kind of now understand what the first step is. And you have a bit more of a kind of linear vision in terms of how you can then proceed and get to the point where you want to get to. It's quite difficult for people to kind of say, open a business, and then you go, well, where's your clients going to come from? And you just look at it and go, wait for them to come to me. I don't know. So you have to have some sort of mechanism in order to move things forward. But yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, myself and business partner set the business in 2014, full range of kind of accounting services and advisory work, taxation, et cetera, et cetera. Taking on clients, looking to grow the business, looking to hopefully forge a decent reputation in the industry, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Well, you and I have worked together for more years than I care to remember now, and I think I've referred my fair share of clients over to you. But one thing I really like about working with you, Mike, is no question is too stupid. And I think I've asked my fair share of what I'm sure you consider to be very basic accountancy questions over the years. But it does feel like a partnership. Like, you know, you genuinely do give a shit about my business and how it grows. So thank you for that, I guess.
Okay, we do. That's the best way we want to work. It sounds like a cliche, but one of the most rewarding things about doing our job is forging good relationships with people, good people who've got good little businesses, or, you know, businesses that then can scale to become, you know, a big business or a whatever it might be. And helping them along the journey, helping them, you know, understand all this other stuff that life throws at you and everything else that's in mind, but being able to be there at the end of the phone and say, yeah, I can put your mind at ease. I'm here to support you in this context because, you know, I understand that you're not an accountant, so you don't know the answers to these questions, and there is no question too stupid. You know, I might walk into a chef and say, I have no idea how to make this. It doesn't mean that it's any less value. We just want to make sure that support network is there, because ultimately we're only ever going to be successful if our clients are successful. If we're giving them the wrong advice, if we're not supporting them, if we're not telling them the right sort of things, the businesses will fail. They're not going to refer people. We're not going to grow ourselves, and we won't be successful. So it's a bit of a slow burn. You have to look at it along the lines of, you know, we want our clients to be successful. We want everybody to do really well. We're only going to be successful off the back of that if our clients do well. So we need to really take a vested interest in their business and make sure that, you know, they're getting everything that they want to do met and they achieve their goals as best they can, you know, within reason. Obviously, you know, I might have, you know, the dog walker who says he wants to have a, you know, a villa in Marbella, but managing expectations, making sure that they're making the most out of whatever opportunities in front of them, that's all.
Yeah, well, this is series 6 that I've recorded now, and one of the strongest things that's come out that successful leaders and business owners need to have is to know their own strengths and to know when to outsource something that isn't particularly their strength. So I think that's a pretty good example of what you're talking about, isn't it? Is get a decent accountant, get a decent lawyer, whatever you need, so that you don't have to be a jack of all trades.
Precisely that. You know, it's, I remember a conversation we had years ago, which I've had with numerous clients down the years, but you can't spin all the plates yourself. You can't pick up every call, you can't answer every email, you can't do every single kind of piece of your work. So one of the most important things, I think, for a growing business and small business is to, you know, identify the areas that you can then effectively start to delegate or move on or pass over to staff, and, you know, put your faith in staff in order to do that, or, you know, get support in the right areas, be it from a solicitor or an accountant or anybody who's got more expertise, be it, you know, recruitment consultant, somebody who, you know, is going to know the market better than I am for jobs, somebody who's going to know the legalities of things better than I do from a law perspective with a solicitor. So it's about, you know, understanding your network and, you know, the value there. It's always better for you, for example, to, you know, pay a member of staff to, you know, look after the admin work, make sure people are getting back to you on email constantly, picking up the phone, making sure that your clients have got, you know, that point of reference, than you doing all of that yourself, because your time is more valuable. You need to understand the value that you put in, free up some of your own time to concentrate your time on the things that are going to help grow your business the best. That isn't necessarily always picking up the phone and doing emails.
Yeah, absolutely. I much prefer to operate in my zone of genius than mess around with spreadsheets. So thinking about our listenership, which is primarily owners and founders of fast-growing businesses who are looking to scale, but do it in the right way, in an authentic, values-led way, what advice would you have for them?
Oh, probably relatively difficult one. I think there's a number of things for the scaling of businesses that tend to be important. One of them is to have a clear, consistent vision, exactly what you want your business to look like, how you want to deliver it, what you want it to be. So us as an example, we want to be a successful accountancy practice, offering accountancy services, with advisory work and tax assistance and all of the other things that come under the kind of moniker of, you know, professional financial help. Mm-hmm. That said, we understand that in order to do that, I can't, like I said, spin all the place myself. So we need to build a robust team. So I think that, you know, making sure that you've got good employees, a good team behind you, people who can you can rely upon is a really important thing. I think that one of the key things that we look at here is incentivizing our employees, making sure that the environment for them is absolutely, comfortable, and they feel, valued, and they feel that, their role and their position isn't undermined. They feel that there's opportunity for growth. They feel there isn't, a glass ceiling. I mean, as an example, we don't, which is a very, very off kind of topic for an accountant, but the majority of accountants are run by people who, like the thought of having, their, shirts with their initials on and their own cufflinks and a fancy pen and all that sort of stuff. And they have their own office with a big fancy leather chair. We don't really work that way because, we want to give the right sort of method of approach to our staff. So, we all sit in the same environment. We have like an open plan office environment. We all mix together. We do the same sort of work. I think it's important that if I'm expecting my staff to do, some work that might be a bit mundane or a bit monotonous, that they can see that I'm willing to get my hands dirty too and do it. And it gives the right sort of approach. And, making sure that we've all got a kind of common goal, having regular away days, making sure that we're, keeping everybody motivated. That to me is one of the most important factors of scaling the business, because you've got then effectively almost like an internal support network of people who are all pulling in the same direction. One of the worst things that I've found and I've seen is demotivated staff, because they're not going to be doing what you want them to do. They're not going to be working in the best interest of the company always, and they're not necessarily going to be putting in 110% effort. It's not necessarily to say that you have to put in 110% effort to get anywhere, but it does definitely help your business, and it will help the mindset if you've got a happy team and you've got a team who feel valued in terms of their approach. That's a definitely a good method to build. In terms of scaling the business too, it's I suppose key to understand your role in the marketplace. We might look at ourselves as an accountant and we might think, well, we've got a good, kind of reputation across Leeds, but we could easily expand that into Yorkshire. Or, as a, let's say as a restaurant business, you might want to open a second branch, or you might want to concentrate on some branding, or you might want to, looking at takeaway as an example. In order to do that, you've got to understand, is there the demand there? Do people want this? Can your scaling work, is the scaling, worthwhile? What you don't want to happen is scale a business from £100,000 turnover to £1 million turnover to make the same amount of profit, because that's just for vanity purposes. If, by scaling your business, it's going to be worthwhile and it's going to be the right metric so that you're going to get more value out of it, then great. But, the metric isn't always profit. The metric might well be, your staff being happy. It might be, your business working with the right sort of clients. It might be, the people that you're working with are, charities, or it might be people who are helping in the community, or whatever the metric is that is important to you. That's the thing that I think is most important to concentrate on. So when scaling a business, I'd say the last thing that you really need to worry about is profit. Don't worry about the performance. Look at all the other intangibles. Look at getting a motivated workforce, looking at making sure that the value of your offering is absolutely spot on, making sure that you're what people are expecting, what people want, what the demand that's there, you're satisfying as many of those criteria as you can. And, in the majority of businesses, you tend to find, as if by magic, the profit tends to follow if all those things kind of get met.
Ah, interesting. That's kind of a departure from what you were talking about earlier about the traditional, dare I say, dinosaur approach to accountancy, where profit is king, cash flow is king. But you're actually saying, that will come, have the faith, get everything else right. And
it will. If you're preoccupied with profit and all you're worried about is making money, then you're probably going to be diluting the value of your offering and what you're actually looking to achieve. I think one of the most...
Well, there's a soundbite right there.
I think, one of the most common mistakes that people tend to make is they get a business, it starts to make a bit of money, they see the money in the bank account, they think, oh, brilliant, I can go and buy something nice. They drain the bank account, it all goes in their pocket. They go and buy a fancy car, a fancy watch, or whatever it might be. And then all of a sudden they're thinking, oh, my business isn't doing quite as well as I was expecting. And you kind of look at it and go, you need to treat it like your friend. It shouldn't be like this just kind of thing to provide for you. If you knew your friend had, a big bill to pay, you wouldn't go and borrow a load of money off them. You know what I mean? It's the situation where you need to probably kind of be responsible with the way that you act around your business and look at that from the right perspective that, why are you in business? You're in business, granted, because you might want to make some money and you might want to keep a roof over your head. Well, brilliant, but, without getting too kind of economist into it, but going like Maslow's hierarchy, but there's different levels on the pyramid in terms of where you want to get to.
Yeah, we're all miles away from identity at the moment.
All right. But when you kind of get to that point and you're thinking that you're getting too preoccupied with profit as the metric, which I appreciate. Historically, the old-fashioned accountant might turn and go, what money you've made, this is what tax you made, this is how much money you can have, this is what you can do with it. It's not necessarily the most important thing, because money will tend to follow the more successful you get with the other areas. If your product, you'll know as well as I will, if you're selling, you know, the best pizza in town, you're likely to draw in the best crowd. But just by drawing in the most numbers, you're going to think, well, I'm selling twice as many pizzas as the guy next door, so I'm probably going to be making twice as much money. But if you, all you're worried about is making money and you're not worried about making the pizza the best pizza in town, the money's not going to come. So it's a difficult one. It's a hard one to look at, because people naturally, when they're in business, do get kind of preoccupied with profit. They get preoccupied with numbers. They want to know what they're making. They want to know what they can take. They want to know what they can spend. They want to know how much, you know, they can, you know, what they can use that stuff for. But the most successful businesses are the ones that we've got, the ones that aren't really too preoccupied with that. They're the ones that are just looking at offering the best service, or offering, you know, something new, or something with a bit more of a USP, or something that somebody else isn't doing, and not even bother about spreadsheets and P&Ls and balance sheets and all that sort of stuff. They're not interested. They're just worried about doing what they can, and because the money will come.
Yeah, it's kind of coaching 101 as well in the work that I do. You know, find your passion, find your purpose, throw everything you've got at it, and then you know, it's that thing, isn't it? If you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
That's it.
What advice would you have to somebody just starting out on their entrepreneurial journey?
Tough one, that one, because it is a difficult climate to do it. I suppose, first and foremost, have a really clear plan, in terms of exactly what you want to do. Why are you doing what you want to do? And, you know, understand what is important to you. So you might say, yeah, I'm going to set up a business as a making cakes. Well, why do you want to do it? You want to do it for the reason of you want to make the best cake around, or you want to have a better work-life balance, or what is important to you in terms of why you're beginning your business. Then when you understand how you want your business to be, do you want to, you know, be slogging your guts out working 40 hours a week to try and, you know, make as much money as possible? Or do you want a better work-life balance? Or do you want the best product? Or do you want, you know, to have a good reputation, whatever it might be? Then you can understand how you want to run it. But unless you've kind of got a consistent plan to know exactly what you want your business to look like, quite often you can kind of get a bit lost in things, and you can kind of, you know, scat from one thing to another, and before you know it, you're not really delivering what your original intention was. So I think that's pretty important, is have a plan, have a robust plan, have, you know, an idea of exactly what you want to look at. Then try and understand the market, try and understand, you know, ideally is there demand there? You know, you might want to, you know, go and be a professional skier, but if you live in Leeds, it's going to be hard. So, you know, if there's a demand for what you're offering, that's where you need to probably be diverting your services and what you want to be doing. I suppose from there isn't a huge amount more advice other than you just need to put as much effort in it as possible, you know. Sling as much mud at the wall and eventually some will stick. You know, you will start to get some kind of traction with stuff, and perseverance is probably one of the most important ones to be starting a business, because a lot of people kind of get a little bit down in the dumps and they, you know, benchmark themselves against other people. They think, oh, they're doing really well, or they've done this, or they've done this fast. It's not about that. Just worry about your own journey. Worry about, you know, are you doing the best you can with the product that you've got, the service that you provide in? Do you think that the clientele that you're providing it to are seeing value in what you're doing? Can you then look to grow your business from there? And automatically you'll find that you'll probably get referred, you'll get word of mouth business, you'll, you know, even if you do a little bit of advertising or whatever you might be, you'll start to draw people in. And if they see, you know, that your business is worthwhile and valuable, and it's a good service or product, then that's kind of how you will start to begin to make traction. But that is difficult to do when you're first beginning, because it might take 2 or 3 years to get to that point. So I think perseverance is probably the key one. A consistent plan, something that, you know, you've got a clear vision, and just perseverance to make sure that you give yourself every opportunity.
Tortoise, not the hare.
That's it.
when would you recommend getting an accountant involved? That's not too a loaded question.
I think that you need to look at every situation separately, because everybody's circumstances are different. You know, if you're a business that is, you know, selling £10,000-£20,000 worth of stuff, and you can kind of keep on top of some basic bookkeeping, and you feel that you're comfortable enough to be able to do, you know, your tax returns yourself, then you don't need it as a necessity. At the end of the day, a self-assessment tax return is called that because you're supposed to self-assess. But we always suggest that, you know, the majority of the time, you're going to see value in not only the advisory work that you might get alongside from getting an accountant who can help guide you, but, you know, tell you what opportunities might be available, inform you on ways in which you can run your business, how you might be able to access finance. It tends to be, from our perspective, more of a kind of advisory role, more over than just the straight compliance. I would always suggest that any business that's, you know, turning over more than 20 grand, you really should be getting some advice and some capacity, because, you know, even if it's just a couple hundred quid for doing a tax return for that sort of level of fee, it will be more than worthwhile, and it will probably save you money in the long run, because, you know, put it this way, the vast, vast, vast majority of tax returns that I've seen done by people who do their own and not done right. So it's not only that, but it's peace of mind. It's peace of mind to know that, you know, if you are looked at, it's going to have been done right. You're getting guided in the right way. And, you know, things are then in a position whereby you've got a support network from, you know, a professional who can then help your business to grow should it get to a position of growth. What you don't want to be doing is, you know, starting to turn over a couple £100,000 and then all of a sudden go, oh, I might look at getting an accountant now. And then to be informed that you should have had a pay-as-you-earn scheme, you should have been VAT registered, you should have done this, you should have. So I don't think that, I mean, from our perspective, for example, if you were a new business starting out with a plan, with something that you wanted to look at, and you were just getting the wheels in motion, you were thinking, it'd be nice to have some other advice, it'd be nice to speak to an accountant, I don't want to get charged, I don't want to do this. We don't work like that, as you know. We're not going to all of a sudden, you know, sit you down and then you're going to get a bill land on your doorstep the next day. We want businesses to be successful and grow. And if you get on board with us as an accountancy firm, we'll talk to you, we'll try and help you along, and we'll bill you when we've done some work for you. But if we're just talking to you, then that is kind of gratis as such, because we understand how difficult it is. You know, we've started a business, you started a business. It's a hard, hard task. And if you are looking to get an accountant involved, the earlier the better, I'd probably say. Obviously, a lot of people would probably think, of course, he's going to say that he's an accountant. But I think that from our perspective, the insight and the value that can be added by just having that kind of safe pair of hands to help you is invaluable. Whereas if people try and kind of persevere themselves, sometimes that's where they can get unstuck.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I can only say from my own perspective, but I remember that in the very, very early days, just being petrified of getting something wrong and HMRC coming after me. Because I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know how to be compliant. I didn't know how to submit a VAT return. I didn't even know whether I should be VAT registered, or, you know, whether to go flat rate, whatever. And just the weight off my mind of just having somebody just to go, there you go, you worry about that, I'm going to worry about growing my business, was quite liberating for me. And, you know, I say that hand on heart. How practically, what do people need to do to set up in business? So I'm thinking like registering as a limited company or self-employed, all that stuff that, gosh, seems like years ago for me and you again.
Yeah. I mean, so let's say as an example, once you've got your business idea, you've got your plan, you know who your target audience are, and you want to then begin kind of working on stuff. Well, first and foremost, you want to go down, you know, two avenues 80 to 90% of the time. So your first choice is you go self-employed. So if you go self-employed, you need to register with HM Revenue and Customs for a UTR number. So a UTR number is a unique taxpayer reference. It's very similar to an NI number. It'll attach to you forever and a day. It'll always be the identifier from which HMRC will pick you out of the pile as such.
And you'll always be searching for it on the 30th of January.
You will. And you'll be trying to get these pink letters and going, is it that number? But yeah, so it'll be a 10-digit number, and that'll apply to you from there. That then links you into the system, thereby you then have a formal obligation to prepare a self-assessment tax return and present it to HMRC. So the time frame that you do that for is the fiscal year, 6th of April to 5th of April, and then you have an obligation to prepare your return and submit it and make any payment due for any taxes owed by the following January, the 31st. So that, in a nutshell, is very basic. So that's kind of the situation. If you're self-employed, you need to get in touch with HMRC, get yourself registered, and then just understand your deadlines and what you need to present to them. You will then pay tax on the income that you made in the kind of self-assessment system, so the same system as income tax. You know, the first chunk 0%, the next chunk of 20%, the next chunk of 40%, the next chunk of 40%, as you know, and that's kind of how it would work. Your alternative is you go down the route of establishing a limited company. There is a few other options as well, but these tend to be the majority of the time the ones that people would pick. If you go down the route of a limited company, it's a separate autonomous entity from you. So it's the elephant in the room. You know, it's the other thing. It's ABC Limited, as an example. So this new business then have a number of different obligations. So its obligation there would be you have to present company accounts once a year to Companies House. So they go in annually. So you would not work to the fiscal year, you would work to the point in which you would register. So as an example, if I set up a business today, ABC Limited, I'd be setting up in June, which means that my year end would always be June. So every single year thereafter, you would have to prepare your figures July to June, July to June. In addition to that, you also have to prepare a corporation tax return that sits alongside your company accounts. That goes to HMRC, works out the amount of tax that you need to pay, and you pay your tax. You then have 9 months following your year end to pay the tax that's owed to HMRC. And that's the deadline from which you then have to settle any amount that's due. A couple of other compliance bits that you need to do, kind of an MOT that you have to put in once a year, similar sort of thing to that for business, and just say who you are, where you're based, what you do, what you're called, et cetera, et cetera. Then be mindful of some of the other kind of compliance matters that you need to look at. Do you need to register a payroll to pay yourself? Is that the most, you know, tax advantageous way to do it, as an example? As an alternative, do you need to be VAT registered? Have you reached the point in terms of your turnover that you have an obligation to be VAT registered? Do you want to do it voluntarily? Is there, you know, pros and cons for this? And that is the very, very tip of the iceberg in terms of that. From there down is, I suppose, where we then look to advise people and instruct people and help people along in terms of what they should be doing, how they should be working, what scheme might be appropriate for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the other bits underneath that.
And that's where all the goals and vision come into it again.
That's it. Yeah. And then understanding that, you know, that's your compliance, but these areas are the way in which you wish to work, and this is how we can help you kind of facilitate that.
So how quickly could somebody set up and be a proper, in inverted commas, company? And how much would it cost?
For us, we charge just under £100 to do it, and that will be for... setting up multiple shareholders, different classes of share, as an example, that might have different rights associated to them before we go into kind of more complex territory, including the fee that you need to pay to Companies House. Alternatively, you can go onto the Companies House website and you can do it yourself. I think it's £12 off the top of my head. I should know that, but I think it's £12.
Oh, thereabouts.
Yeah, but you can go on, you can set up yourself, you can register a limited company. As long as you aren't trying to use a name that's already in existence, you would need obviously at least one director, at least one shareholder, at least one person of significant control. You need a trade classification, which effectively would tell Companies House what you do. You know, are you a dog walker, are you an astronaut, you know, what are you choosing to be? And then from there, it would normally take somewhere between 24 and 48 hours for that company to incorporate. You would then get an official company registered number. From there, you can then, you know, start to open a bank account or, you know, get a credit card or anything else associated with the company. So nowadays, quite a quick process. It's all online.
It's amazing, really, isn't it? It's, you know, so for £12 and what, 24, 48 hours, you could be a limited company.
That's it.
At the very basic level.
That's it. Open for work. And then, you know, a UTI number takes a little bit longer. It's an online application. But again, you'll normally get that between about 7 and 10 days through the post. And then you're officially able to work from that point as well. So, of course, you have to notify HMRC that you began working self-employed, but you don't have to do it on the first day that you begin working. So, you know, if you decide to start your business today and then, you know, it takes a week for your UTI number to come through, that's fine too.
Amazing. Pretty heady, exciting stuff, really, isn't it? What you could achieve.
We find it exciting. I'm sure it's not nice for a lot of people. But
that's very true. That is very true. I find it exciting anyway. On that point, what advice would you give yourself when you were just starting out, you know, knowing what you know now?
Good question. Probably don't sweat the small stuff. Things tend to appear to be a bigger problem than they necessarily are. And I think that one of the main lessons that I've learned and continue to learn is running a business is about dealing with problems. You're never going to get to a point where everything will be smooth and perfect. You're always going to be having to deal with certain aspects. And the bigger the business gets, the more problems tend to come up.
You've just got to level up, haven't you?
You do. And I think that, you know, early on, perhaps we would have been more worried about, you know, certain small things, and we maybe were over, you know, concentrating in areas that weren't necessarily adding as much value as we needed to, and we probably needed to, you know, relinquish some of those things a little bit sooner rather than later. I think one of the best things that we did was when we first started employing staff, and then it gave us the opportunity to have a bit more breathing space. And then, you know, with that obviously comes a number of different issues, but we clearly saw that, you know, the tangible benefits to our business of kind of having somebody on the payroll and also, you know, helping them, you know, pay their bills and everything else as well. So I think that, you know, no kind of path is right. And it'll be difficult because, you know, by making mistakes and, you know, by having that learning curve and that learning experience has helped us to kind of understand our business better and improve as a business. But I think that, you know, probably don't sweat the small stuff too much is quite a good thing to kind of look at, because, you know, a lot of businesses are going to come up with problems and issues and pitfalls, especially in the current climate. And, you know, it's about how you recover from those and how you move forward from those, as opposed to kind of, you know, dwelling on them, I'd say.
Yeah. What's your best tip for resilience?
Probably have faith in your own ability, have some value to your own, you know, ability. You don't necessarily, you know, need to feel devalued because you make a mistake, or if, you know, something doesn't go exactly according to plan. You know, have faith in the caliber of what you're offering and persevere with it. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I think people can learn, but it's something that can come naturally to a certain extent as well, that you can either naturally be quite a resilient person that can kind of try and look at a problem as a way to overcome something and learn from it, as opposed to potentially worry too much about it. And I think that you kind of get there by just persevering with the way that you think and the way that you feel and you're offering.
For our podcast listeners, I've just gone to my bookshelf and picked out a book called The Obstacle is the Way, which describes exactly what Matt's talking about. That's a Ryan Holiday. That's a good one for the old resilience. On that note, Matt, what's a book or a podcast that you could recommend that you can't live without?
Do you know what, in terms of business and what we've been talking about, I'll have to be perfectly honest with you, I've listened to very, very few podcasts in that area because it feels a bit like a busman's holiday. So what I tend to do, there's a couple, I suppose, that what I like to do is, you know, obviously everybody in the current situation has been kind of, you know, a little bit more housebound and without as much opportunity to kind of get outdoors. So I've tried to take the opportunity to either walk or jog or run and listen to a few things that kind of, you know, don't necessarily look at the doom and gloom of what's going on, or don't necessarily kind of help me, you know, go back into my business mindset. So one of them is, I don't know if you know, you might not know, but I'm quite a keen boxing fan.
I did not know that.
No, I have been for quite a long time. So, you know, collect stuff, go to fights, all that sort of stuff. I've got quite a keen interest in it. So I listened to a boxing podcast, which if anybody's interested in boxing, I'm sure you should go and check out, called Ringside Toe-to-Toe. It's interesting because it talks about, I suppose, different eras, different people, has different guests on, and it's just quite a bit of, you know, a good bit of lighthearted escapism as such.
God knows we all need some of that at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's it. and one of the podcasts, which is kind of in the same vein, but also can have a few good messages on it as well, I think, that are kind of a bit more important, is another podcast called, what's it called? It's on Joe, called Rugby something, or the House of Rugby. That's it. Sorry, I slipped my mind for a second. So, a podcast called House of Rugby. It's a rugby podcast and a show, but it tends to have other guests on as well outside of kind of that realm. And it's lighthearted and it's kind of a chit chat between guests and kind of regulars, where they kind of delve into funny old stories, but then they also approach kind of ongoing situations and things that are happening. As an example, there's quite a famous rugby referee called Nigel Owens. He's one of the only, if not probably the only, openly gay rugby officials. And he's got some really good messages around kind of the LGBT community and kind of how he's overcome some issues and kind of advice to people to, you know, who are going through struggles in their own kind of situation, where they can maybe, you know, look to get advice, how they can kind of, you know, deal with stuff, how they can, you know, look to, you know, live their life. And it's quite a good thing because all of the guests that they have on, they tend to be able to kind of pick out some really good kind of bits of context. As an example, there's a rugby player who had quite a tough upbringing in a kind of an inner city area of Bristol, and discussed kind of some of the issues that he had from a race perspective and also from kind of a poverty perspective growing up, but also ways in which he's overcome that, ways in which he's learned to deal with that, ways in which he, you know, is helping people's minds get changed. And that's good. It's a good one to kind of, you know, if you're just going for a long walk, to just put on and be able to kind of switch off to. But it also has a message that kind of resonates underneath kind of just the, you know, the chit chat and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They're always the best ones, aren't they? The ones that slip in the lesson alongside the entertainment.
Learn something today. That's good.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much for sparing the time to speak to me. I think
no problem. My pleasure.
Hopefully we've inspired some people.
I hope so. Fingers crossed.
And we will put a link to the business in the show notes. So is that the best way to find you, or is the better way to get in touch?
We're in the process of getting a new website built, so forgive the landing page at present. But if you find us on our website, you'll be able to have a contact form, or you'll be able to email us. And if you've got any questions, I'd be more than happy to help anybody out there.
Perfect. All right. Look after yourself, and I'll see you soon.
You too. All the best. Cheers, Claire.
Thank you so much for listening. It's been great to have you here, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you like what you hear and you'd like to connect, head on over to claireackers.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn. Just search for Claire Ackers. That's Claire with an I and an E. See you next time.